One of the really useful qualities we're developing as we stay with the breath is mindfulness. If you're going to stay with the breath, you have to keep the breath in mind. As soon as you forget the breath, you're off. It's this training in remembering that plays a huge part in the practice. And it bears repeating again and again and again that mindfulness is remembering. It's your active memory. It's how you apply your memory to what you're doing right now, what you're experiencing right now. Because there's a lot to remember. It makes a huge difference on the path. Usually when a thought comes up, it's your thought. If an opinion comes up, it's your opinion. A feeling, an emotion, a mood. The first thing you think is, this is my mood, my feeling, my opinion. And we don't get to look at them carefully. We just ride with them. And we end up dealing with these thoughts and opinions in very unskillful ways. We need a framework, a different framework for looking at these things. And that's what we've got to remember. The Buddha said, you look at the body in and of itself, feelings in and of themselves. Feelings here meaning feelings of pleasure and pain, neither pleasure nor pain. Mind states. This is where they have moods, emotions, and opinions all come in. And then mental qualities, specific mental qualities that are skillful or unskillful, that go into making up mind states. In each of these cases, the Buddha gives you a framework for looking at these things in and of themselves. So for the time being, that you can take away the my and mine and look at these things as events, as part of a causal chain. Where do these things lead? Take feelings, for instance. They're feelings of pleasure and pain, neither pleasure nor pain. And as the Buddha points out, in the abstract, there's nothing really wrong either with pleasure or pain. But there are specific pleasures that are worth cultivating and specific pleasures that are not. Same with pains. There are a lot of pains that are totally useless. The Buddha gives an example of all the pain that goes into the huge sacrifices the kings and queens used to do back in the Buddha's time. He said it's painful in the doing and painful in the result. That kind of pain doesn't accomplish anything. And there are pleasures. There's the pleasure of concentration. There's the pleasure of being generous. As he points out, some pleasures are worth developing and other pleasures are worth dropping. We're not here just watching things arising and passing away on their own, because they don't arise and pass away on their own. There's an element of intention in how we shape our experience. Simply focusing on the breath, you're changing the feelings in the body. If you learn how to apply your attention to the breath in the proper way, you can create what the Buddha calls pleasure not of the flesh. This doesn't happen on its own. There may be moments where it comes and goes, but you're not here just watching the moments. You're trying to develop the ease that comes with being with the breath, the pleasure that comes with being with the breath. And that's a good pleasure. That's something worth cultivating. The other pleasures, the Buddha says, you want to stay away from them because of the impact that they have on their mind, the impact they have on your mind, and through that, the impact they have on your actions and the way you affect other people. So this is the framework you're trying to remember. When a feeling comes, not so much it's my feeling or I like it. The question is, where does this feeling lead? This brings your feelings and mind states into the realm of right resolve. As the Buddha said, one of his accounts of how he came across the path was that the first thing that really got him on the path was his ability to separate his thoughts into two types. Types that were worth pursuing and types that were worth letting go. What was the distinction? Basically, the distinction was, where did these thoughts lead? What kind of intention was motivating them. Where does that intention lead? If the thoughts had to do with sensuality or harmfulness or ill will, you would drop them, beat them down, actually. If the thoughts were thoughts of renunciation, goodwill, harmlessness, you'd allow them to roam around. He says it's like having cattle during the dry season when there's no danger of their getting into the crops. All I have to do is just be aware that they're there. Remember that they're there. That was it. But he noticed that if you continue thinking in those ways, even if it was skillful, it would tire the mind. So that's why he brought the mind to concentration. So it's the same with all the different thought patterns and mind states that can go through the mind. You have to figure out which ones are the ones that you can allow to roam around and which are the ones you've got to bring under control. And specifically, what kind of thinking is useful to get the mind into concentration? If your energy level is down and the mind is getting depressed, okay, what can you do to lift your spirits? When the mind is scattered all over the place with lots of energy, what can you do to calm it down? If the mind is not concentrated, what can you do to get it concentrated? If the mind is not in an expansive state, what can you do to expand it? These are the questions the Buddha has you ask. This is the framework you want to keep in mind. This is your frame of reference. This is where you want to establish your mindfulness. Same with mental qualities. The hindrances, you want to recognize these are hindrances. You know, sensual desire comes up, and all too often we just want to run with it. Thoughts of ill will come up. We can think about all the harm that other people have done us. We can stew in that for quite a while. And the mind gets sleepy, you just tell yourself, sign that I'm getting drowsy, I'm getting tired, I need to rest. In other words, you side with the hindrances because they're yours. The Buddha wants you to take that little label off and say, okay, look at this simply in terms of this framework. Keep this framework in mind. Any one of these five hindrances comes up, something you want to deal with. This is where the other aspect of mindfulness practice comes in, which is ardency. What do you do to develop the skillful states, and what do you do to get rid of the unskillful ones? You want to keep that in mind as well, what lessons you've learned from the past. Try them all out, and nothing seems to work. Okay, how do you use your ingenuity to figure out what's wrong? You watch again. Until you can see the connection between a particular mind state and what's giving rise to it, and how you can cut it off at the source. As for the factors of awakening, how do you give rise to them? How do you recognize them when they're there? Sometimes they come in just little seeds or little tiny sprouts. How do you recognize a moment of concentration, a moment of mindfulness? How do you recognize the potential for rapture? You want to look for these things. Learn how to recognize them, and then how to nurture them when they're there. When you're having trouble settling down, where in the body is there a sense of calm or serenity? If you're all tied up in tension, say, in your head, okay, what part of the body is not tense? Focus there. It's like that old book, Drawing on the Left Side of the Brain, where instead of when you're drawing a face, drawing the eyes and the nose and the mouth, you draw the spaces between the mouth and the nose, the space between the eyes and the nose, the edge of the hair and the eyebrow. In other words, you're focusing on the spaces that you tend to ignore, and you find that you can draw much more accurate pictures because you don't have preconceived notions about what an eye is supposed to look like. You don't let your preconceived notions of what an eye looks like get in the way. You don't have preconceived notions about the shape of foreheads or the shape of the space between eyebrows and eyes. Those are the areas where you tend not to look. So by focusing on the areas where you tend not to look, you find there's space. And you can draw the new and unfamiliar space, you get a much better picture. Same with focusing on the breath energy in the body. In the areas where there's a lot of tension, you don't focus on those. You focus on the areas where things are going well. And the going well here may not be all that impressive to begin with, but if you give it some space, give it some time, it'll develop. I mean, one of the advantages of the kind of mindfulness practice that encourages you to be accepting and equanimous and patient is just that. You develop powers of patience and equanimity. So when you can't figure something out, you watch. And when you figure out something and you know that you're going to take, it's going to take time, well, you have the patience to stick with it. But mindfulness practice doesn't stop with equanimity. It's one of the elements, but remember, the mindfulness is the remembering and the framework you're trying to keep in mind. So you can recognize when something comes up in the mind, what do you do with it? This way it fits into the, ultimately, into the Four Noble Truths. Each truth has a duty. When something comes up, is it part of the truth of stress? Okay, what do you do with stress? You try to comprehend it. Try to see where there's the clinging and which particular aggregate you're clinging to, and learn you learn how to depersonalize these things so you can get the upper hand. Part of you may resist saying, well, this is me, these are my feelings, this is me, mine, whatever. But what's happened is these things have taken you over. You're enslaving yourself to these things, the things that you cling to so much. That's what the Buddha is giving you, is a framework for freeing yourself. It requires effort, it requires ardency, but it's all to the good. It's this way that mindfulness leads to the right effort, the right concentration, all the other right elements of the path that take you to freedom. So remember this, mindfulness is about remembering, holding a certain framework in mind, and then using that as a guide to what needs to be done with whatever comes up. And you're not just waiting for things to come up willy-nilly. You realize, look at these certain things, when they come up, you have to let them go. You have to get rid of them. Other things, when they come up, you want to encourage them, keep them going. As the Buddha says in a sutta that I hadn't read until just recently, this is what it means to have mindfulness as your governing principle. Not just watching things coming and going, but realizing some things, when they come, should be allowed to go really fast. In other words, you get rid of them. Other things, you want to encourage them to come because they're skillful, they're helpful. So remember this. Because keeping this framework in mind, as I said, is the framework that helps you find freedom from all the things that you used to lay claim to. But now when you learn that you can pull off that label, you're not deprived. You're freed.